Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It seems that working people are living ever more time-pressured lives. And the way we keep track of time has evolved from the sundial to the hourglass to the Rolex, the Timex, to the atomic watch, to the Apple watch. Well, in this program's semi-regular feature, What's It Really Like to Be Ah, I like to think that listeners especially benefit when hearing about under-the-radar careers. Well, with me in the studio is a guy who for 40 years now makes his living buying, selling, appraising, and repairing watches. He has 88 Yelp reviews, nearly all five-star. His shop is in all places, in the lobby of the Mason O'Farrell Garage. Anybody's here with me now, fortunately. Paul Sarigan, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
So when did you decide to have a career in the world of watches?
It happened when I started working at a watch store, and it happened to be in Woolworth on Pollen Market, the Woolworth. And I was doing engineering, electronic engineering, because my mother wanted me to be an engineer. Anyhow, my uncle, when I was about 12, they were in their basement. They would do these beautiful works of art and jewelry, and I was really fascinated with that. As life continued on, I started working with a few other uncles who had gas stations, and I fell in love working as a mechanic and underneath the hood of a car, except my knuckles were always either dirty or bleeding or both. So I started working on these watches, and I fell in love. From there on, I decided to take up the career of horology, become certified.
Horology is the science of
studying,
of time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And with that, I started working with a watchmaster and learning the beautiful technique of handling these rare, fragile, yet incredible timepieces that are virtually like if you took a block engine and shrunk it down to the size of a quarter. And it's truly amazing work. Watchmakers were even considered as high as grade as doctors back in the 1900s during the railroad period. Chronometer-grade timepieces were extremely important. Otherwise, railroads wouldn't be running correctly. Anyhow, as things went on, I decided to take over the business, and my life took off after that. And falling in love with that, I really found my way in life, even though I had uncles and family members, you know, telling me I should work for big corporations and all that. And unfortunately, they lost their jobs and their pensions and some of them their homes and so forth. There's nothing better than to really find what you really truly like to do in your life and follow that dream, even though it may, you know, seem scary or full of fear and anxiety. I didn't even think about that. And just do the best you can. You know, that's all that I do in a sense with people. I honor them. Be an honest person in what you're doing. And just keep going forward.
That was 40 years ago. If I were your son and I said, Dad, you're inspiring. But we now live in a world where there are quartz watches and in which massive consolidation of said corporations. And I say, Dad, should I open a, you know, that quaint little one-off independent wine shop? What would you tell me if I were your son?
Well, if I had a son and he would choose to do what I'm doing, and honoring him, I would gift him my store. Timepieces are, they're works of art. You know, if you wanted to get an appliance, such as having a picture of yourself, or would you like a painting? Would you like just the plain glass that is, as we were talking earlier, like 50 cents, or would you prefer to have one that was handmade and perfect with bubbles and imperfect? Well, the timepiece, it runs a few seconds off daily. Quartz watch runs precise. These are two different items. One is just a high-grade machinery that was designed to run as accurate as possible. And quartz is virtually, it's a computer. And there's a total difference between the two.
But back to the question. I'm your son, and we live in a world in which most people, and I'm guilty, I'm wearing right now, I'm wearing a Casio that is atomic, that gets its time accurately from the U.S. Observatory in Colorado, and it loses no time, and it's got a solar battery, so it never needs to be replaced, and it cost me $50 or $60. It looks great. If I'm your son, do you tell me to ignore that and, you know, hope that there's enough people who value the equivalent of that fine hand-blown glass, that is the perfectly precise, less precise handmade movement and that needs servicing, or do you tell me to go and get a day job?
I would definitely honor my son, whatever he chooses. I would give him a choice to choose what he would like.
Let's say, okay, Daddy, I want to do this, but I want to learn from your 40 years of having done it and seeing how the field has changed. What insider baseball, what insider tip would you give to me so that I don't need to get rich, but I want to make a living? What advice would you give me? Let's say you couldn't give me the store, but I was going to start my own store. What advice would you give me as to how to end up making an honorable, honest living in the world of today's watches?
Well, if you're so fortunate and lucky, watch the master at work.
How do I get him? You know, how do I find a master?
Befriend yourself with a watchmaker or a technician, and of course, you definitely would have to go to school. And with that, with Rolex or with Omega, you would have to go through a training process.
So a separate school, horology, where I learned the abstract science at some college that no longer... I know you told me that at John O'Connell School for the Mechanical Arts, they used to teach watchmaking, but that's long gone. But now that Rolex and Patek or whatever have their own schools, do I need to go to a college and get that degree in horology first? And if so, where is the esteemed ones? And how hard is it to get a specific training program for, say, Rolex?
2 to 4 year program. Just signing up with companies, you can just call them and get that direct. And again, it's having the ability. It's like a surgeon. Do you have the qualifications working with your hands? Is that your calling in your life?
I was shocked when you told me that even some of the big prestigious brands no longer stock old parts, really old parts, and you have at your little store, you've got a wife who is truly a watchmaker who actually can fabricate a part from scratch. Tell me a little bit about that.
True. Watchmakers, they're just the essence. Technician virtually is one that does service and replace parts. A true watchmaker can fabricate the part. And we ourselves have saved many watches, even where the company such as Patek Philippe or even Vacheron Constantin would refuse to repair it, and we were able to bring this watch back to life.
How old would a watch have to be so that Patek Philippe would say, you know, we don't stock that anymore, those parts?
Typically, it's almost like the car industry. What is it, 5 years, 10 years?
Jeez.
Others are 20 years. So it varies per company.
Wow. You know, I want to get us a window into into the brain of a guy who lives in the world of watches. So I brought a couple of old watches here. There's three. Pick one and talk out loud. What goes through your mind as you see it?
Well, this particular watch has a mesh band, solid gold, and it is encased with the actual casing. It's soldered on. So back in the 70s, it was the thing to do. Is to have a gold watch, your gold bracelet, gold chain, and be like John Travolta, I guess. But unfortunately, those days have passed, so a watch like that would probably be scrapped just for the value of the gold. The second watch you have is a watch from the 40s with teardrop lugs, very unique.
A lug is what attaches the body of the watch
to the
band.
Uh-huh. True. And this particular watch has a lot of character, so it is something that... It's like a time capsule, and you get to wear it. I had a client come in. He said, people are wearing broken watches just because they look cool, and they don't even care if they run. So it was kind of humorous to hear about that one. So this is truly a little gem here with these fancy lugs. The third watch you have has a gold band, but it is detachable from the bracelet. So it's very unique in a sense where you can remove the bracelet, put a leather strap, and bring back the 70s.
You were telling me what was really interesting is that there have been trends, even that sometimes people will wear old watches, but the real trend is that women today are wearing men's watches, right? And big ones, you know, with like 40-millimeter diameter faces. What's another trend in the watch industry?
What's another trend? Well, it probably would go back into time, back to the 90s, when the Italian women were taking away their husband's watches or stealing them or their dad's watch, and it just took off to that, typically like a Daytona Rolex or a vintage solid gold watch. And it just took off after that. And after 2000, it was the norm for, you know, women's watch, 33, 36 millimeter. And men were wearing watches anywhere from 40 to 50 millimeters. It's kind of gotten down to about 42, 41 millimeters, perfect size for men, 35 for a gal. So what is the trend? For men, I've been finding a lot of military watches, like that steel look, not the gold look. So you can have a stainless steel watch that was worth maybe, back in the day, it was prestigious to have a gold watch. I mean, you would want to have that. And they would make gold-filled watch just to resemble it, instead of the high cost for making a gold case. It's come around. So if you had a stainless watch, it would be more valued than the gold watch.
Wow. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Paul Sarigan about what it's really like to be a watch expert. He's kind of he runs his own little shop in all places, and it's called Sarigan's Fine Watches or Timepieces or whatever, and it's in the Mason O'Farrell Garage. You know, I think what I want to do is give our listeners a chance, if they have a question for you, about what the career, the small business of running a wine shop. Sometimes, maybe after some days with a tough customer, maybe you want to run a wine shop, but he does for 40 years. He's been running a watch shop, a timepiece shop. If you've got a question about any aspect of running that or a small business in general, I invite you to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. You told me that people all the time try to sell you fakes of these fancy brand name watches, including some excellent fakes. How do you tell a fake?
Typically, the imperfection of a watch. The case is when they come out of the factory or the bracelets, they're perfect, especially with high-grade watches. Unfortunately, we've given away a lot of our ability to third market countries all over the world, so they can almost perfect the look, the style, which is virtually almost perfect, but it is imperfect, and that's what I look for.
And can you tell that without opening the case, or do you have to open the case?
About 90% of the time, I'll be able to tell just by looking and knowing what to look for.
Okay, if you open the case in the 10%, is it that the parts don't seem as machined as well, you know, that kind of thing?
It's so obvious. Huh. Like, the movement is not a Rolex movement or a Tag Heuer. It's a lower grade or not even belonging into that particular watch.
So why, you know, I mean, there are a certain category of people, of course, who value authenticity. But let's say you're telling me that some countries are doing a hell of a job of making watches that look, you know, essentially imperceptible, even almost imperceptible to a Paul Sarigan. If I can get one of those fakes for a fraction of the cost, why should I care? And with quartz movements costing 20 cents or 50 cents, you know, they throw a quartz movement in there. Why should I care whether it's a fake or not?
Get married. Give your fiancé a fake diamond.
No cubic zirconia?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Typically, having something that is authentic, such as a beautiful painting by a beautiful artist, is a huge difference than having the original.
Unlike the posters I have of famous paintings in my house. Let's say you were starting over again. Would you, first of all, would you have, you know, you, now I'm not talking about me if I were your son or any of that, you, Paul Sarigan, you're 18 years old. Would you have done anything different, either chose a completely different career, the same career, done it differently? What would you have done if you were 18 years old now, but knowing what you know now, but you were in the year 2018?
I might answer that in a different way. Knowing that what I enjoy doing is working with my hands and with my mind and having a photographic memory. These watches are very complex,
wow,
by the way.
Photographic memory. What does that mean, photographic memory?
We'll get back to it. We didn't have cell phones back in the day where you can take a photo of the watch. When you disassemble the watch, some of them were so complicated that I would just draft a picture of it with my hand to know how to put it back. You know, the complications, it was like in Vietnam, I was listening how they were making jet engines way too complicated. Mm. Same thing with watches. A simple fact like having a date calendar, they would have triple springs. It was like unnecessary, but to align them all and so forth, so it was a lot more complicated. But it got into like triple calendars, moon phase, chronographs, all these typical high-grade complex timepieces. You would either have to have that or a schematic to put it back together, or great memory to being able to do that.
So now coming back, you said you like to work with your hands and your brain, and you've got a photographic memory. So what would you do career-wise? Would you go into some aspect of the watch world or something else?
Well, I definitely wouldn't have gone into auto mechanics. For myself, yeah, this is my enjoyment. I'm not an artist. I can't paint.
So, okay, let's project forward then. You've been doing it 40 years. Nobody does everything forever. You know, you may do this another 1 year, 10 years. I'm not even going to ask you. But that day will come that you're, you know, hopefully you're still compos mentis and physically okay, but you say, you know, I'm done. What do you think Paul Sarigan will do next?
Well, this is off the topic completely.
That's all right. So you're a human being. We're talking about people's lives here.
I'm a man who has lost three children.
Oh.
And my last son was a gift to me, and I learned that I was a healer. I'm able to do things that most people can't. Mm. It's a gift, and the people that I work with are all incredible healers too, and they're all talented, and they have a gift of their own. Follow your gift. Mm. There was a time where I lost my lease, and I was going to give it up to become that, what I just mentioned. And I love miracles, doors open, close, in everyone's life. I was able to get another store with a reputable reputation from a man who also has 40 years of experience, and I combined the two stores together.
So it makes you see, you lost three of your children, and you got a fourth, is that what you're saying? No, I didn't get that.
My last child was a gift. He really taught me that what I am.
Okay, well, you certainly were an excellent guest. I'm really glad you came in, and I'll end with a softball question. What is your ideal customer whom you'd like to contact you at Paul Sarigan's Fine Watches at Mason and O'Farrell Garage?
Kind, enjoyable, fun, no. All the above. But again, a timepiece is, if it is for you, it's like a beautiful art piece, then come on in and learn about timepieces. So, every person is different. Do you want a dress watch? Do you want a casual watch? Or do you want them both combined? So,
I can also say I read his Yelp reviews. When I pick and I decide I'm going to do a topic on this show, I will very often, if the person is running a business of some sort, I will look at his Yelp reviews. And what they say about Paul, he's infinitely patient. People come in and hug him all the time. And so this is not, slam him in and slam him out. So if you, he's not a Timex guy. But if you do consider a watch, a timepiece, a piece of art, this is a guy you should, in my honest opinion, dear listeners, you should visit. And again, Paul Sarigan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And now we turn to you, because most of you are not going to want to be watchmakers, but you have a work issue. And so if you have a work-related problem of any sort, you or someone you care about, I invite you to call, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you're entry-level or very senior, for-profit, non-profit, whatever your problem. I have many clients who are unemployed. I have many clients who are employed at extraordinarily high levels and are still unhappy. All that's the common denominator is you got a work problem. Feel free to call in now. The price is certainly right. This is my pro bono work. The price is zero, zippo, nada. Thanks to KALW. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While waiting for the calls to come in, you know, probably the biggest inhibitor of career success is procrastination. And yet I believe it is treated too symptomatically. I mean, imagine you went to a doctor and you complained of a headache, and the first word out of the doctor's mouth was, oh, take an aspirin, have a nice day. Well, if your headache turned out to be, say, God forbid, a brain tumor, you would sue and you'd win. A headache is only the symptom. Its cause is going to determine what the right treatment is. The same is true of procrastination. You should decide how to treat your procrastination only after you've identified the root cause or two. Here are procrastination's most common causes, and for each one of them, a tactic that has helped my clients. Nothing works all the time. This is not magic land, but has helped them. First, I want to talk about this. Sometimes a person's life is too bad to make the effort to procure the procrastination. You know, they say, it's not even worth it. My life's in the toilet. It's not going to be any better. If you're feeling like that, it's too early to work on procrastination. Instead, take baby steps to improve your life's what I call blockers, whether it's your work life, a relationship, or lack thereof, your emotional health, your physical health. Of course, your life doesn't need to be in perfect shape before you address your procrastination. It just needs to be good enough to feel that your procrastination is worth controlling. So that's the first, almost prerequisite issue. I've got a whole bunch of these, but we have a caller who took a little while to muster the courage or whatever to call it, but has a question for Paul Sarigan about watches. So I'd be happy to welcome him on the show, given our flexibility here at KALW. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. What is your question for Paul Sarigan?
Hi, this is Dan. Can you hear me?
Yes, beautifully.
Right, first-time caller. First of all, I have a great deal of respect for this industry, and I've been an amateur of watches. So the question that I have is, in today's world with the revolution in manufacturing and 3D printing and movements that are around, what do you think about a revival, so to say, or making watchmaking more accessible to the amateur, so to say? So that's my question.
Watchmaking is different than being a watch technician. So my question to you, do you want to learn how to make a watch or do you want to learn how to repair a watch?
And it would be very specifically making a watch. So starting from maybe making scale models and something that's slightly bigger and then progressing from there as an entry point in this.
I personally never designed my own movement. So I've had a watch technician that did make his own movement, and it took him like 3 months. Mm. It's very time-consuming. Go for it. If you know, it's your personal pride in making. That would be like making your own engine in a car. That's really remarkable.
Yeah, as a career counselor, I am excited to hear you say this. You know, in the same way as some people in the arc of their life look back on something they took 3 months or 3 years to do, even if they never made a penny, even if it cost them a lot of money, to feel that they created something, that the creative instinct, at least in some people, is powerful. So you have, you know, really, you have my unbridled support as well as Paul's, so I certainly hope you'll do that. And so I'm guessing that he needs to find a master watchmaker and apprentice for that person or do that project under his or her supervision. Is that correct?
It's amazing, YouTube. Go into it and just look at how they make parts and how they shrink them down to whatever size and making the bridges and so forth. It's so fascinating. Go ahead and do that.
I'm delighted that you called. Thanks so much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Yep.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'll give out the phone number again. If you can certainly call in with a question for Paul, or if you've got a work-life problem, I call them what I do, workovers. You call in. There's no pummeling involved, usually. But if you've got a work-life problem and you'd like to try to help get a baby step, maybe even a giant step forward, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And when I was taking the, before I took the call, I was offering some kind of cause-specific ways to address procrastination. And the next one on my list here is sometimes people are procrastinators simply because they tend to lose track of time. They just don't know where a day went, sometimes where a week went, sometimes when their life went. So for a day, or better, a week, keep a timer in your pocket, you know, like the clock app on your iPhone, or a small kitchen timer is fine, whatever, and set it for whatever time you think would be helpful to track. It could be as short as a minute, as long as an hour. And each time the timer chimes, you're getting a sense of how long that interval is. And if you're ambitious, log what you were doing during that interval. And after a few hours, review your log. Do you want to allocate your time? That would kill two birds with one stone. You're getting a better sense of what a minute is or an hour is. And you're also getting a sense of how you're using your time. A next possible cause of procrastination is that you're simply impulsive. So you tend to just escape from unpleasant tasks and escape to pleasant ones, even if you know it's going to hurt you long term. You might try what I call consciousness raising. I'm not talking here about the Buddhist kind, although that can be helpful. For the next hour or day, your choice, be aware of what I call the moment of truth. That's the moment when you're facing an uncomfortable task and you're tempted to literally or figuratively get a burrito. Now, of course, there are times to opt for the burrito, but by being conscious of whether to do that, the procrastinator more often concludes it's worth the discomfort of the darn task and that the burrito can wait. Next possible cause of procrastination is that you simply have a philosophy of life that is centered around the pursuit of happiness. Now, some procrastinators are helped by recognizing that the life well led usually entails accomplishment. After all, many people could be happy with a life filled with sitcoms and snacks and bubble baths. Yet even a hedonist has got to agree that that kind of life is less well led than a life that balances work and play or even prioritizes productivity. Next possible cause of a procrastinator is that you're a perfectionist. So, which I'm guessing that watchmaker guy is. So tasks are a long, painful struggle. If you are that perfectionist, you're going to understandably procrastinate subsequent tasks. It may help to realize that you are in control of what I call a perfectionism pedal, you know, like gas pedal. Rather than just defaulting to perfectionism all the time, consciously decide whether to press the metal to the pedal to the metal and do that task perfectly, or is this a time when the perfect is the enemy of the good? And for at least that task, half pedal or even less is good enough. Another cause of procrastination is that you're simply too often tackling tasks that are too difficult. If you particularly procrastinate tasks that are hard, can you delegate any? For example, I'm lousy at fixing things around the house. I'm the opposite of Paul Sarigan. I am terrible with my hands. I can't fix anything. So my first, I realize that I got to just call the guy. Or the woman, whatever. Or if, for example, your job is often too hard, let's say a white-collar job, do you need more training? Or should you pivot into a job that skirts your weaknesses and accentuates your strengths? Another cause of procrastination is that you are tackling, it's the converse here, you're tackling tasks that are too easy or too repetitive. Well, boring tasks can generally be hired out inexpensively. So consider outsourcing such tasks like, for example, house cleaning or doing the bookkeeping for your small business. Even if you're not wealthy, the freed up time is often worth it. Another possible cause of procrastination, let's say you're emotionally fragile. So you're afraid you're not going to rebound quickly after a failure or rejection. Of course, you know that even highly successful people fail, but they rarely allow themselves to wallow. They quickly, maybe even instantly, glean any lessons from the failure, and then, instead of recriminations or anger, they redirect to some positive activity. And that is not an inborn trait. It's an acquirable habit. So, if that sounds like you, try to keep reminding yourself that if you have a reasonable chance of succeeding at a task, it's worth trying. If you fail, you'll survive and maybe learn something from the attempt. Of course, as you know, and this sounds a little bit like your mother, but if you don't try, it ensures you're going to fail, and you lose the learning opportunity, and you decrease your sense of self-efficacy. And that tends to worsen with each subsequent task until you feel there's very little you can do. I'm not saying you should tackle tasks that have a poor, what I call, risk-reward ratio. For example, I'd be a fool to try out for the Oakland Raiders. Chances are very good that not only wouldn't I make the team, I'd need an orthopedic surgeon. Another possible cause of procrastination is you're afraid that success would swallow up your life. Yeah, success does tend to yield more demands on your time, which can eat into your work-life balance. It may help to upfront decide, in general, how much you're willing to work. Maybe in the short run, you don't mind long work hours, but that generally you want to keep it to 40 hours a week. Many people decide that putting in 40 good hours makes them employable enough, and if that's not good enough for a given employer, it will be for some other employer. Now, some of those may not be address your situation. Sometimes it really, I tried to not just give you symptomatic Band-Aid cures, but sometimes all of these looking at the root cause things are irrelevant. Sometimes you simply need a little tactic. So these tactics help my clients to manage time better and stop procrastinating so much. Picture the pros and cons. Stay alert to that moment of truth when you're deciding whether to do the task or get that burrito. And at that moment, remind yourself of how your life would be better if you did the task and how it would be worse if you didn't. The next tactic is what I call the one-second task. Objects in motion tend to stay in motion. So, if you're about to procrastinate a task that you've decided you should do, ask yourself, what is my next one-second task? 1 second's a friendly, not intimidating amount of time. Maybe it's turn on your computer or open a book. After that one-second task, do your next one, and then your next one. Often that few seconds is enough to get the ball rolling. And that's also useful, by the way, that tactic in conquering a roadblock. I mean, your first reaction to a tough part may be, oh, I'm overwhelmed. Instead, see if you can take a deep breath and ask yourself, okay, what is my first one-second task? Next tactic I want to offer is the one-minute struggle. Of course, there are exceptions, but usually, if you haven't made progress on a roadblock within 1 minute, you're unlikely to. So struggle for just a minute and then ask yourself, should I keep struggling? Should I try to get help? Or could I do this task without toppling that roadblock, just kind of go around the roadblock? Next tactic is ritualize. Some people's procrastination is mitigated by structure, like allocating from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Saturday and Sunday to do your taxes until they're done. And the final tactic I want to offer is something called the Pomodoro Technique. That's named after one of those, you know, those tomato-shaped kitchen timers, but any timer will do. You set the timer for 20 minutes, and you work until it chimes. Then you take 5 minutes to do whatever in the world you want to do. You repeat that 20 and 5, 20 and 5 twice more. Three of those comprise what they call a Pomodoro. Or use one of the Pomodoro apps. They're all over the internet. You can use that for your phone. And that can sometimes be helpful. Look, I want to summarize by saying it may be overambitious if you're an inveterate procrastinator to, you know, get a cure. But maybe one or more of these things that I've, this buffet of options that I've shared with you, may at least reduce procrastination's toll on your life. I want to give out the phone number again. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, related to procrastination or not, whatever your work problem, I usually can help. I've been doing this almost 29 years. It'll be 29 years in October. I've heard it all. And frankly, the harder the situation, the better I like it. So if you've got a work-related problem, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I got an email from a recruiter, an external recruiter. Sometimes they're called headhunters. The company is called StrongSuit, and the guy signed it with his individual name, Jeff Hyman. And he talks about how a top recruiter goes and tries to recruit an employee from a well-employed. This is not somebody who's an unemployed job seeker. I wish that employers would treat would-be employees with the kind of kid gloves you're about to hear. But it was mind-blowing to me, and I thought maybe it'd be mind-blowing to you. He says that before even talking about some new job that he was going to suggest to this person apply for, he'd ask about her biggest frustrations. And I'm using the female gender just because. So let's say this is a rock star employee who's working for someplace, and he would ask her biggest frustrations, and she would then say, talk about her, you know, her micromanager or the company's unrealistic goals with insufficient resources, her 2-hour commute. And this headhunter would take careful notes so that he could remind her of that pain at the appropriate time when he's trying to convince her to take the new job. This headhunter would study her background and social media, what school she attended, her hobbies, her family life, what she treasures, and ask all about that. Even if she collects ceramic pigs, he'd be interested. He'd ask all the questions that the boss never did about what she holds dear. This headhunter would paint a picture of her career path, not just sell her on the role that he's trying to convince her to apply for, but what comes next after that. And after that, the headhunter wouldn't make any promises he couldn't keep, but he'd let her know what awaits her if she does really well in a new job. He would then meet her partner or spouse or kids over dinner. The three of them would discuss how this move to a new job would benefit her family situation and her future. He, with the headhunter, would talk all about the challenge, since that's the number one thing that rock stars crave in a role. He would set her up to meet the best employees at the new employer, place of employer, the rock stars at that current employer, not for an interview, just to meet and greet. Because rock stars aspire to work with other rock stars and do the best work of their lives, that can help. He would then walk her through the new company's numbers, open the books, invest the time to show how the company's P&L and balance sheet works so she can see that she'd be working for a strong company or nonprofit. He would tell her about his last vacation and the fact that he didn't check email while he was sitting on the beach so that she could envision doing the same. And when he talked with her references, he would try to convince those people about what a great move this would be for this particular rock star. I'll stop there. There was more. But, you know, I really, you know, my visceral reaction was, you know, I feel so bad for the typical job seeker who ends up having to go through 4 or 5 interviews, often doesn't even get a response or just gets a form letter rejection with no real feedback. And to think that if you are both smart enough, but also fortunate enough, privileged enough, whatever, to be a rock star, how they do fawn over you. In any case, I'll give out the phone number again, then we will go right to the phones. If you need a workover, want some help with your work life, you can call in. I can try to do the best I can to help you. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I work for a small government agency,
mm-hmm.
and it took about 3.5 years for me to get a review, despite it being in our, like, code.
Wow.
And our manual that you're supposed to have a review.
Yeah.
Regularly.
Yeah.
I think it's annually.
Uh-huh.
And my manager is also the HR person.
Hmm.
So she has chastised me for talking to any... We have almost as many managers at my organization as we do Indians, like people
wow.
who do the work.
I know these top-heavy agencies. It kills me. Anyway,
yeah, it's one of those places. You know, and I love so many things about it, and it's certainly an ideal place for me to be for retiring, which I will be doing, you know, down the road here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really... That's really, of course, on my mind, mm-hmm. and a reason I don't want to leave, but this manager is a person who's and our HR person, our only HR person, is a person who has made other people flee mm-hmm. the position. She's done really malicious things to me, like she's actually even faked errors, and I have proof of this,
wow.
and I've told her that I have proof of it. And we've had conversations about it.
You mean you said you made an error that you really didn't, or inserted an error into your work? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, numerous errors, all
Jesus.
Related to one particular project, and this was some time ago.
What's her motivation? What do you think is the reason she's doing that?
I think it's because she feels like if someone comes in who's competent, and I'm certainly not the most competent person in the world, but my objective being there is to do a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why would you work somewhere unless that was your objective? And so I want to do a great job there. And when I try to do that, it's like the more I am minimized, I guess.
So I'm quite there.
And my background doesn't really fit the position that I'm in.
Mm.
And it wasn't a secret when they hired me. And I certainly thought they would take advantage of my experience and my skill set. But really, they don't really seem that interested in it. And it's something I'm having to adjust to, that, you know, they really just want me there to do X, Y, and Z and nothing more.
Okay, let's move. Let me move to the concrete. Multiple choice. Okay. Which feels right? Either just accepting this role as is, talking to some support person there who is, may not be HR or your manager, but seeing if you can get your job description changed, having a heart-to-heart with this manager slash HR person, perhaps with another person there, or looking to make a lateral move within the agency since you're thinking about retiring, you know, either that agency or within that whatever is covered under your retirement plan, which of those feels like the better place to start our conversation, you and me?
Probably a lateral move or just a move. I think a move to something that has more responsibility and more pay, at least eventually.
Okay.
I mean, I feel very underutilized there, and okay. I feel like they could be totally, I don't want to say taking advantage of me, but, you know, they could totally be utilizing me.
Okay.
For something that's helpful to them,
right.
If they just could identify that. But, I mean, the real crux of this issue is that I don't really think that this manager of mine slash our HR person is going to go anywhere until
right.
she's ready to retire, which will probably be, I mean, she'll probably be there 35 years after she's qualified to retire. It's that type of personality. And everyone just sort of enables her.
Okay, so...
And as far as her quality of her work, I know nothing about that, but I've tried to talk to other people about possibly moving to a different position or getting more responsibility or changing my manager or the actual specific things that have been done.
Right.
And it just, I keep being looped back to, she's your manager.
Got it. So let me interrupt you. So, clearly within your agency, it sounds like you've tried everything, but... Usually, whether you're in PERS or whatever the retirement system that you're in, there may be other, you know, we are in the Bay Area, for better or worse. We are filled with all kinds of large government agencies. Within your retirement system, since you're talking about retirement, outside of that small world in which you're living, are there other agencies that would, where you would not lose your seniority,
yes,
your retirement?
Yes. You mean just find another job? Yeah,
yes.
Yes,
that's what it sounds like.
I'm sorry?
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like the next step would be to make a list of the agent. There's always what I call the front door and back door approach. To look and see first of all, make a list of all the agencies where you could see yourself wanting to work, both because of a content area, because of the geographic location, as well as being compatible with your current retirement system. Then, yes, apply for jobs that are publicly posted, but perhaps more important, see if, I'm sure you have some allies in your current workplace or otherwise who might be able to open the door for you to have become an inside candidate for a job when it becomes available. Because the odds are, at this moment in time, those agencies may not have the right position for you. But if you've laid the foundation by having somebody on the inside on one of these other agencies like you, then when the job becomes available, you're not just an anonymous person applying with a bunch of others. Have you done enough to lay the foundation with people at other agencies so that when the right job comes up, you become an inside candidate?
That's a good idea. It's a good thought. I have applied other places, and I've gone since I've had this job, I've only applied at one other place. And I went on an interview, and I mean, I went and did the testing, and I passed that, and then I moved on to the next level and went in for the interview. And then I didn't make it to the final round. But, you know, I do have a lot of anxiety, especially as I've gotten older, about just dealing with jobs. And, you know, I worry what this person would say as a reference for me if I did get to the same point that I had gotten to, say, before, and if I'd moved on. I don't trust this person.
Right, right. You don't count. You have to assume she's going to give you a bad reference. But there are plenty of people who have had bad references who get new jobs.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, almost everyone at this place, actually everyone, understands her personality and what she's done and what she's done to me, what she's done to others.
So I'm going to interrupt you for the purposes of this call, because we have other calls and I want to get to it, it sounds like you need to be systematic. Don't let your fear of the bad reference stop you, because you're going to get...
Yeah, you're right. I have other people there that I could use as a reference.
Right.
And that is... I appreciate your objective view of it. I like the idea, especially of sitting down and making a list of places I would want to go.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling.
That are somewhat meaningful. That's probably the biggest takeaway in this conversation with you. So thank you for that.
You're most welcome.
Because I've done that in my past life, and it just feels like I can't for some reason now. But why can't I?
And if you are worried about your own skill set, then fine. To develop the courage, the best antidote to a lack of feeling competent is to say, you know, what is the kind of jobs that I'm open to doing, and where is there a skill that I could gain? Should it be to be more concise when you're talking to people? Should it be to gain a technical skill? Should it be whatever it is? But say to yourself, okay, I'm going to work on one area for growth that is realistic for me to improve and that might help augment my job responsive potential. Could be leadership, could be public speaking, could be whatever it is. And then with that newly found increased confidence, then invoke your network to see about getting a job at an agency where you'd feel like you'd be more valued and feel better about your life.
It's not completely a throwaway. That means something to me. That's a
right.
big piece of it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I used to have that life. Okay, well, thank you so much. You're amazing, and I so appreciate you and your time and your advice and experience and listening to you. So thank you.
It's a privilege to do it. Thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Tonight's very interesting to me because my scenario is a combination of procrastination and career choice.
Uh-huh.
So my scenario is I have a very successful career in technology and software sales for 25 years now.
Wow.
I'm 47 years old. My youngest daughter will be graduating high school in 5 years, and I have this sort of plan to exit my life in technology and move on to the next chapter in my career as she sort of fledges.
Uh-huh.
And as long as I've been an adult, I've always wanted to be a writer.
Uh-huh.
And I have not been able to get off my butt and start to immerse myself in what I, you know, truly desire to be kind of the next phase of my life and my career. I've written sporadically, I haven't even been able to sort of get into a routine of journaling, and I haven't really put anything down on paper since college meaningfully.
Play shrink with yourself. What do you think is the reason that you haven't even written a blog post or a short story or an article in your area of technology, you know, for a post on your forum, you know, on some technology forum? What do you think is the real reason that you haven't done that minimal amount?
Yeah, I've done some writing in my career for sure, but I must discount that because that's not the type of writer I want to be.
Okay.
I'm super interested in fiction and historical fiction and being a novelist.
Okay, so let me interrupt you because being a historical novelist, it's a mammoth. It feels overwhelming because you need probably a year or more of research on the history before you can even start, and then you've got to do the normal work for a novel, the character development, and the plot outlines, and you got to, you know, it's years of work, so that's overwhelming. If I asked you, I said, you know, objects in motion tend to stay in motion. What if I asked you to start with the very simpler task of writing a short story? There's something called flash fiction in which people write something that's usually under 1,000 words, and as a way of putting your toe in the water. You may find that that motivates you or make you decide, you know what, I really don't want to do this. But without doing much research, making yourself do no more than 1 hour of research on whatever historical sliver of time you're interested in, that particular, you know, it could be Elizabethan England or 14th century Africa or whatever you want. Do 1 hour of research and then think about writing a little short story that's under 1,000 words. That's like about, you know, 3 pages. Would that be enough to start you, or is there a deeper problem that's inhibiting you?
No, I agree with you. I think biting off small chunks like that is the right thing to do, especially given the you know, the busyness of my life. And that's really, when I was listening to your suggestions about or the different flavors of procrastination, I connected with a couple of them, and certainly with the perfectionist one. You know, I think I have this notion,
yes,
I'm kind of stuck in my head, that if I don't come out and sort of, you know, pen something that's just truly incredible out of the gate, then it's hindering me from getting going.
All right. Well, I got to say something about that because I have a little bit of a basis for doing this. I don't know if you know this. I have 11 books published and 3,400 articles, all nationally published.
Wow.
And
yeah.
And I've sold 250,000 copies of my books. And yet, as I look back on all that writing, you know what the greatest benefit of has been? The process of writing. I like writing. I like struggling with the word, the sentence, the structure, the idea, putting myself in the shoes of my audience, all that stuff. That's who I am. I have to write. When I go home the night after the show, I may get a glass of wine, but I also may write because I have to write. So I'm inviting you, and perfectionism is the enemy of feeling good about the process. So as an experiment, as you write this short story, given that you say your problem is perfectionism, I invite you to take 1 hour to do the research on whatever, and whatever you can learn in 1 hour about your sliver of time, great. But then after that, I'm going to shock you. I want you to set a timer for 2 hours, and your first draft of this short, short story, under 1,000 words, must be completed in 2 hours. Just in the same way as when you were in college, you had to you had essay exams, and you had to write a blue book full of stuff within an hour. I want you to take that approach as an experiment in seeing if you will realize that the way to perfection, and I am quite perfectionistic in the way I write, but my first draft, I put aside my perfectionism in the favor of organically starting at the beginning and going all the way to the end. And then with that crappy first draft, I reread it, and it's so much easier to revise your way to perfection. I typically read a draft 4 to 8 times before I submit it. So if I ask you to try it my way, 1 hour of research on the historical sliver you care about, 2 hour timer to write a crappy, I don't care, crappy first draft that is organic and whole, that has the right plot elements and a character that's interesting, and then keep revise, read it again, you'll find things to fix, things to fix, things to fix, and that's fun. That tweaking is fun. Does that hold any promise for unlocking your procrastination regarding writing?
Yes, I totally believe it does.
Okay. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you, Marty.
I'll give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I love the diversity of the calls. You couldn't have anything more different than somebody who was hated her boss in a government job and somebody who wants to quit his tech job to become a historical novelist. I don't care what the problem is. Actually, it's the more for our listeners as well as for me, the more difficult and interesting and varied, the better. So if you got a work-related problem, you want me to take a shot at it, phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to share with you we all hear about certain skills that are key to success at work, intelligence and drive and emotional intelligence. But there are some under-the-radar ones, and I want to share one with you now, and I call it titration. We normally think of titration in regard to chemistry or medication. You know, for example, playing with the dosage until the optimal benefit and side effect ratio is right. But the concept of titration can also be applied to how we function. The person who consciously titrates how to behave in a given circumstance is going to do better than someone who always proceeds to a natural level. I'm going to give lots of examples, but I always like to prioritize you, my dear listeners, so I feel like I want to go to the phone. So welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Marty.
Hi, yes.
Hi. Okay, so I'm a 45-year-old single mother.
Uh-huh.
I am a musician.
Uh-huh.
I am have several degrees in music.
Uh-huh.
And I was recently divorced, and I've been basically scraping by with my own private music studio and teaching at several preschools.
Right.
This is very rewarding work, and
right.
I love it because I can also make my schedule around my children.
Right.
However, I have no retirement to...
I think
I would love to open a music school, but I'm scared to death.
Yes, I would be too. I think before I made the major investments, as you find the work rewarding, you're doing very well, I'd probably do more reach outs to existing music schools or either to existing music schools and do some more hours, or try to build relationships with the music departments at local elementary, junior high school, and high schools to say that you were, you know, and describe, you know, everybody's got a different métier. Somebody does a better job of teaching beginners, others advanced, some particular instrument, some just teaching the love of music, others great at reading, others teaching improvising, playing by ear, whatever. Identify your métier and describe that to the chairs of the music departments at local schools and see if you can get enough clients that way so that you're not making, because I'm, you know, opening up a bricks and mortar school is expensive, and then there's the marketing and insurance and whatever, and you're a mom, you're recently divorced, I'm sure you're dealing with emotional issues, it's probably easier to incrementally increase your income. Now, but I was also well aware that you said that you also don't have benefits and no security. So, you know, there is, of course, the time-honored thing to people. Do not be an Uber or Lyft driver, because after your expenses, you will lose money. I'm not asking you to do that. But see if, usually when somebody has been pretty much a self-employed person, like a music teacher, you're not going to survive, you're not going to be the winning candidate when you apply for a job and the resume is, you know, they're looking for 4 years of corporate experience or whatever. So normally the first job out is by asking your fellow, usually your fellow moms or your friends to, if they know somebody who can open a door for you. And that way you might be able to get a job, whether it be at a company or nonprofit or government agency or whatever, that's either full-time or part-time, maybe provide benefits, and et cetera. And that would be the alternative, to do either one of those two things. Either try to get some more private clients by doing a little better job of marketing along the way I described to the department chairs, identifying your niche, or using your friend network to try to become an inside candidate for a job. Do either of those feel like they're promising leads for you?
Yes, I think definitely with trying to build up my clientele and going to the local schools would probably be more up my alley.
Yeah, I don't want you scared to death. I mean, I think your brain was appropriately telling you to be right about opening up a music school. So I want to thank you very much for the call.
Okay, thank you, Marty.
Take care. We don't have much time. I only have another 30 seconds. I just want to say a little more about the titration, that titration concept I was talking about. It can apply to, for example, to intellectual rigor. In the extreme, we all titrate. That is, we speak more simply when talking to a young kid than with an adult. But successful people also titrate in less clear-cut situations. For example, if you're talking with somebody you assess as having superior reasoning skills, you're going to use all your brain power. But when you're interacting with somebody you believe is a weaker thinker, you would scale back to the level you think best. You then monitor the person's reaction, and as needed, you titrate further. That is, you either press down or ease up on the brain power pedal. That whole concept of titration, rather than just naturally just functioning one way, titrating the way in which you act with people and projects is an under-discussed key to success, both professionally and personally. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, you know this, when you leave a voicemail and then, woo, one big silence, you're ghosted, or you've applied for a job and, woo, silence, ghosting. It's become epidemic. Why? And what to do? I'll talk about that next week. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archives of Dr. Marty Nemco's articles, information on his 11 books, including the just-published Careers for Dummies, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemco.com. That's MartyNemko.com. And you can join Marty again next Thursday evening at 7 for Work with Marty Nemco right here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.